The following is a paid advertisement. The opinions, viewpoints, and promises made during the following program are not those of KHOW, its staff, management, or parent company, iHeartMedia Incorporated.
This show is a legal advertisement, and it is intended to provide general information only. It is not intended to provide specific legal advice, nor does it create an attorney-client relationship. You should not rely on general legal information instead of specific legal advice regarding your specific circumstances. Follow-up contact does not create an attorney-client relationship and does not constitute legal advice.
Y'all ready for this? The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we're here for you. You know, we are injury attorneys in our day lives, but our radio lives are right here for you to answer your questions on any legal subject. This is a law talk show. It's not a political show. We talk law here. You know the drill. 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255. And in the mountains, you can call us at 970-457-1009. That's 457-1009. And welcome to all of our listeners, KRDO in Colorado Springs, KEZZ 94.1 FM in Steamboat Springs, and right here, 6:30 a.m. KHOW. We're ready to go for you. Okay, guess what? You're driving home, minding your own business. Then, boom, you're rear-ended. And you think, wow, that was bad. And then so you start to hurt. You talk to the insurance company. And before you do that, you're going to go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. And you're going to hit the button that says, what do you need to know before you make the first phone call to the insurance adjuster? And this is not a no-brainer. When you have an accident or an event or an incident like that, it is not an ordinary day or event for you. But it is an ordinary day and event for the insurance company you're going to talk to, and they are well trained. Okay, so you've been rear-ended. What do you think is going to happen? If I sat here and told you that eventually, and maybe earlier than eventually, they're going to blame you for part or all of the accident, and you're going, what? I was sitting at a light, I was rear-ended, minding my own business, and they're going to blame me. Yes, they're going to try. And they're going to attack your damages, and they're going to attack your medical records. And they're going to attack your statements and your conversation that you have with the insurance adjuster. You know, in one of our books, the first book we wrote was Don't Get Hurt in the Same Accident Twice, once in the accident and again on the insurance claim. We covered, and part of that book covered the myths in this business. And one of the myths is, well, you know, I've been injured and I was rear-ended. It wasn't my fault. You know, Brad, and one of the myths is surely somebody's going to take care of me. Surely the insurance company's going to pay me.
Oh, no. They're not going to be that easy to pay. They're going to argue that, well, first of all, they're going to tell you that that the accident wasn't that hard and it didn't hurt you. They're also going to say, well, you changed lanes or you suddenly stopped. You had no reason to stop. They're going to say that you changed lanes suddenly in front of the person that hit you, and it's your fault for changing lanes. You did so without giving any type of signaling and letting them know that you were changing lanes. They're going to have a lot of different excuses why this rear-end accident, where there's a presumption, it's a rebuttable presumption, where there's a presumption that that the person running into you is negligent, they're going to give you a lot of reasons why it's not negligence, and they're going to try and find any way they can to get you to say that you did something wrong without you knowing that you're saying it.
Right, and one of the first questions I ask you is if you're wearing a seatbelt. You have to wear a seatbelt in Colorado. There's a statute that they passed that's very punitive against you if you don't wear a seatbelt. Another thing, they say, well, were you looking in the rearview mirror? Well, yeah. Did you see the car coming? Yeah. Well, you could have moved out of the way. What was your body position in the car? Were you torqued? Were you turning? Were you reaching over to reach something in the glove box since you were stopped? That increased your propensity and enhanced your injuries because your body is torqued, as the engineers and physicists like to say. That's one of the ways, or a few of the ways, They do this. You need to know this. Just go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. It's an information-loaded website, and get all of our books free. You can download an ebook free, or you can call us, and we'll give you a hard copy free. Right now, joining us live is Randy from Lakewood. Good morning, Randy. What can we do for you? Randy, are you there? Looks like we've had some problems with Randy, some technical problems. So he called in about an inaccurate accident report. So let's talk about that. Maybe we can get him back on the line here. But accident reports, Brad, the police come. They do an investigation, as you and I both know, because that's what Randy wanted to talk about was accident reports. We both know sometimes some police officers are very, very good and care a lot and do a great job. Some do somewhere in the middle, and some don't do it at all.
Right. You have to recognize an accident report can be an important document. They're not really admissible in court. They've got a lot of hearsay in them. They've got a lot of documents or a lot of information that's not necessary to come before the court. In Colorado, who gets the ticket does not matter in a civil court when you're trying to recover for your damages. You don't get to talk about that. You don't get to say whether or not the person got the accident. But people are going to review it. That's going to be an initial place where they review it, and they're going to give it quite a bit of weight to what it says. So the police officer needs to do their job. Now, the question is, where's the inaccuracy? Is the inaccuracy on something the police officer got from a different witness? Is it the inaccuracy as far as a judgmental thing by the police officer as far as how the accident happened or as far as how much damage there is to the cars? The police officer shows up. Normally, they're going to get statements. A lot of times, they hand out sheets of witness statements, and they just tell people, fill in your statement, and they'll start talking to people about what happened. And they're trying to reconstruct, the police officer is trying to reconstruct, or the state trooper, what happened. Because they're trying to reconstruct it, they're relying a lot on what other people are telling them. But, you know, that's not the end of the accident report.
No, the accident reports are critical. We're going to see if we got Randy up. Randy, are you with us now?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Great. Thanks for what you guys do for the community.
You're welcome. What can we do for you, sir?
So very early in the morning, 4:40 in the morning, we live up in Lakewood, and my wife was northbound on a small artery there, northbound at Colfax and Carr.
Right.
Okay. And she has a CDL license. She drives an RTV city bus and was up very early in the morning.
Right.
And there's two lanes. There's two lanes on the northbound side. The left lane is left turn only, and a 18-wheel truck pulled out there and was in the left-hand lane to turn left, and she proceeded alongside him in the right-hand lane, and all of a sudden he's turning right and scraping up against the truck and, you know, more or less runs her off the road. She's kind of more or less chasing down Colfax, honking and trying to get his attention. They got up to the light at Colfax and Wadsworth. The lights turned green for east-west. He ran the red light left on a red arrow. She proceeded to run it with him, more or less ran him off the road, called the police. Police officer showed up, and she called me in a panic. I got up, threw on my clothes, went down there, and she's all shook up. She didn't get hurt or anything, but, you know, it's a property damage issue.
Right.
So the police officer very much, he said, come up and said, you know what he's going to say? He's going to say he had his blinker on. Sure enough, guess what? Goes back, you know, talks to him. He said his blinker was on. You can get an accident report in a few days. We get an accident report. You read through it. It's shabbily done. There's no drawings of the intersection or anything. And it the whole way along, it felt like he very much was siding with her, saying, you know, you need to give him room. She's like, I'm very much aware of that. I've got a CDL myself. Normally, when a truck makes a right-hand turn like that, they would occupy, do like a button hook turn and more or less block both the lanes.
Right.
You know, most of us have been there, and we have a lot of respect for truckers.
Sure.
So, but we think he just figured it was 4:40 in the morning. Nobody's around. He's cruising down the right-hand lane, turns right. So, you know, the policeman, you know, said he's going to say he had his blinker on. That's exactly the accident report said. Trucker confirmed his blinker was on. Well, we're not sure how he confirmed it. There were no witnesses. She said it absolutely was not on, or I wouldn't have occupied his space. So we need to pursue this through his insurance company, and I'm not very confident with the accident report that we received from the officer. We went up the ranks. That his supervisor was even ruder than he was, and pretty much, you know, they're pretty much talking to her like you know, you cranky old bat, kind of an attitude is how it seems. And they just are, they're saying the case is closed. I mean, we're not trying to get the officer fired or anything. We're just trying to get something a little bit more accurate of a what happened at the scene. We tried to get the officer to go back and look at the intersection. There was debris all over the intersection, you know. And he said, no, I drove by it. I saw what happened. Seemed to be very much in a hurry. Another officer came by, you know, and said, tell him I'll be there in a minute. You know, wrote up a lousy, you know, inaccurate accident report and said, you can get it in a couple days.
All right, you've got a mouthful. That's an incredible story, and we see this all the time. And we were talking about that kind of before we took your call on the air because, you know, some police officers do a great, fantastic job. Some of them are certified ACTAR reconstructionists. Some of them are not, and some of them don't really care. So can you hang with us during the break, Randy?
We'll
catch you on the other side because you got really a lot of interesting, great questions, and I'm sorry this happened to you. All right, so if you stick with us, you're listening to the Bell & Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. You know, even though we're injury attorneys, this show's for you on any legal subject. It's a Law Talk show, 303-713-8255, because we are your champions of the people. Good morning. Welcome back. The Bell & Pollock Legal Show. The show is for you. Absolutely for you. We are injury attorneys, but we'll take your questions on any legal subject. 303-713-8255. And don't forget about our books. You can download them free on our website. If you want a hard copy, you can call us here at the studio or our law firm, and we'll send them to you free. You know, one of our books was called Cowards of the Street. Hit and run, and they are absolute cowards. Right before the break, we were talking to Randy. He has a long history with on this account with regard to a trucker in the left-hand lane turning right. The trucker said he had a signal on, so we got a lot to talk to you about, Randy. The first thing I want to tell you is a couple of things. Number one, you know, I could put my signal light on and turn left or change lanes on I-25, and that doesn't make it right. And I could turn my signal line and cut in front of somebody or turn in front of an intersection, and that doesn't make it right. So, number one, just because he had a signal line on doesn't make it correct. Now, Brad's going to talk to you about the fact that the insurance company is going to rely heavily on this accident report, which makes you mad because it's inaccurate and probably incomplete, and probably the officer from your description didn't even care about it. And so, Brad, what have we got there?
You know, I'm not so sure you're going to get the police officer to change the word confirm to the trucker states that his blinker was on. Does the police report have in there that your wife said that his blinker was not on?
I believe it does state that she said it wasn't.
All right. And did the police officer go any further than that? Did he issue any kind of citation to anybody?
No. And I've got enough background with insurance. Everybody kind of was freaking out about that. I'm like, that's not a very big issue at all.
That's right.
The ticket is not that relevant, and I realize that.
That's right. And so what it appears to me the police officer is saying is he was left in a situation, and I don't think this is accurate, where he didn't think he could do anything. But go ahead.
It seemed as if he really didn't want to.
Frankly. Yeah.
He seemed bothered. When I pulled up at the accident scene, he didn't even have his emergency lights on, you know, which, you know what I mean, just as for safety and to show some level of seriousness. But his car was dark, and he spent most of his time back there with the trucker, and just seemed to, you know, he spent little time with us, and just sort of, you know, hurriedly wrote an accident report and said, there you go, that's all I'm doing, bye, you know.
Yeah, it sounds like he didn't care too much about what was happening. He didn't have any physical injury, and so he felt, look, this is property damage, and I'm not going to be able to make a decision here, so I'm just going to write something up. And maybe he did buddy-buddy a little bit with the police officer, I mean with the trucker, and talk to him. Here's the questions you've got, though. You still have a trucker that now is saying he was making a right-hand turn from a left-hand lane. Right?
He did, absolutely, yes.
Okay, so he says he's doing that. Although we understand the truckers, they have wide lanes and they need room to turn their vehicles and they need to do these type things. You still have a situation where if they're going to make that turn, they've got to yield the right of way. I mean, you know, this should be a pretty simple thing when dealing with the insurance company as far as saying, well, wait a minute, I'm glad he says he had on his blinker. He did not have on his blinker, but he's making a right-hand turn from a left lane in front of traffic or pushing traffic over that he's making it on. He's initiating the contact. Now, did you guys happen to take pictures of where the debris was and where the accident?
Yes.
Okay.
Fantastic.
And does it show which lane the accident happened in? Does it show where things were dead?
You can see the mirror. It tore the mirror off, and it was laying in the street.
Okay.
And, you know, yeah, it's very much, you know, very clear. There's enough debris there. You pretty clearly can see that.
It's going to be on your side showing that what happened is a trucker came into your lane and hit you. Yeah. And that's going to be the important part. I was worried that I was going to hear you saying he claimed that your wife came over into his lane and hit him. But no, you've got it pretty much clear with the accident debris. Now, the fact that the police officer ignored that, I don't think is right. I'm shocked that the police officer didn't look at that more and say, well, wait a minute. Even if I'm going to talk about blinkers and everything else, you took the right of way, you came into this person's lane, you hit them in their lane. You're not allowed to hit somebody in their own lane when they're driving down the road, and you've got a problem here. The police officer letting him off the hook on that is going to be something that I don't think an insurance company can ignore, and they're going to have to look at.
Well, you got it. Here's the way you fight this, Randy. You drill down to the facts. The facts. Okay, forget it, Mr. and Mrs. Insurance Company. Forget it about the blinker. It doesn't matter. The blinker doesn't matter. Let's look at the facts. Here's the pictures. Here's the lanes, okay? Here's how the road sets up. The facts are, and the laws of physics are, this is the way it's going to happen. Not to mention that this is a completely terrifying event. Not to mention that. And so you're going to pay me for the car, and we're going to go back to the facts. Forget the police report. Maybe you need to go get more pictures of the roadway. You got the pictures of the debris. You got your wife's statement, and I commend her for chasing him down. I just talked to somebody this week where the trailer jackknifed and then hit the car, and the trucker left, and a witness had to chase the trucker down.
Now, I'm surprised the police officer didn't do anything about that, but I'll bet the trucker says he didn't even realize he hit her.
You know, she called the city, and actually they have footage of him running the light.
Footage?
And yes.
Well,
And the supervisor said, I don't care, basically. So what?
Give the city notice that you want to hold on to that.
Okay? Exactly.
You want them to preserve that evidence. You need to write a letter to the supervisor, to the city saying, please retain that and make a copy for you so you have it.
Well, Randy, okay. We can help you with that because it's kind of a legal deal. But, I mean, it's called spoliation of evidence, and it's called a spoliation letter. And even though it involves a third party, i.e. the city instead of the wrongdoer, we can help you, and we will help you this week write that letter, okay? And then we're going to give you a game plan on how to approach the insurance company. So don't talk to them. Don't talk to them right now until you talk to us, until we help you this week. And let's lay it out so we can get your property damage taken care of. And that's what you're after, right?
Yes. And you know, they're fortunate in so many ways. A, obviously that she didn't get hurt.
Correct.
B, it wasn't our primary transportation. I mean, she could very easily be in a rental car. We're fortunate that we've got other means. You know, so what we're looking to recover here, we're not looking to, you know, for some frivolous lawsuit.
Sure.
We're trying to recover our property loss.
I think we can help you.
Which I think is more than reasonable. When you guys were talking about, you know, the blinker not making it right, it made me think of an analogy, you know, like how trucks have not responsible. Just because someone says something, when a truck has, you know, not responsible for cracked windshields on the back of their truck and gravel or debris flying out of it, just because you say it doesn't make you liable doesn't mean you're not.
That's right. Exactly right.
Facts. You have to drill down to the actual facts and proof of them.
Randy, as I'm sitting here, I'm questioning even if the guy was making a right-hand turn or if he was swinging wide to make his left-hand turn. No,
he definitely, since he proceeded east on Colfax, that was the direction, you know, because he just clipped her off there and proceeded on down the road. She's driving next to him, honking and flashing lights and everything else. And they got down to the stoplight there at Wadsworth, and, you know, he lights turned green east-west, and he just made an illegal left-hand turn on a red arrow and, you know, went north on Wadsworth, where she essentially ran him off the road to get him to stop.
Right. Okay, Randy, I'm going to put you on hold. You're getting Kevin your information. We'll help you this week. But before you go, one quick situation here. You talked to the supervisor of the trucking company and the attitude. Let me tell you something. When we do a trucking case, any trucking case, serious injuries, whatever.
I'm sorry, can I stop you for just a second?
Yeah,
there?
Sure.
The reason is it was the officer supervisor. It wasn't the trucking company.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Many times we want their phone. We want their phone and their phone records, and we want the recordings, because when the trucker is involved in an accident, a lot of truckers are instructed to call the home base. Okay, they don't. Not go attend to whoever they maimed and maybe killed or injured. They called the home base and said, I was in an accident. What do I need to do? And so you were talking about You were talking about the supervisor of the police officer.
About the trucker, you know, it's like an independent, you know, like an old Peterbilt, and it's not like a Swift truck or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's a small, what appears to be like a one truck operation.
Well,
I would be very surprised if he even called the insurance company. And I realize the importance of when you talk to an insurance company, you're likely recorded and what they try to bait you into and everything else. And so, you know, we definitely, before we pursue this with them, you know, we want to have our be in the best position we can.
All right, I'm going to put you on hold. We're going to give you a legal game plan and help you.
Excellent. Thanks so much, guys.
Randy, thanks for the call. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. By the way, you need a legal game plan. By the way, that's what we give clients when they come in, is free, with a free initial consultation, a free legal game plan, because the insurance company has their own game plan. Right now we're talking to Oscar. Good morning, Oscar. What can we do for you?
Good morning, man. I don't know how to address this. I received a contract from an attorney.
Right.
And I read through it, and it was a paragraph in there that stated negotiability of said contract. So apparently you can negotiate the 40% of a award or the cost expenses. I don't know. They didn't specify what you could negotiate with.
Okay, so were you injured some way, and you were talking to an attorney about that?
Well, yeah, it's a medical liability.
Okay, a medical case, and you went to an attorney, and they gave you a contract, right?
Right.
And then, so your question is, what on the contract?
Well, it has a paragraph in there. It says, negotiability of said contract. You can discuss it with the attorneys.
Okay, that seems very strange to me. Okay, we got a break coming up, and I'm going to ask you to hold. But lawyers are governed by and regulated by the Colorado Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court issues rules and regulations. And one of the rules and regulations says when you're going to represent a client on a percentage basis, contingent basis, it's called. Then you have to use certain forms. And so we're going to catch you on the other side of the break. Can you hang with us, Oscar?
Sure.
Okay, because what you're talking about doesn't sound familiar to me, but we need to figure it out for you. So we'll catch you on the other side there. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. It's an information letter website, and feel free to call us right here on any legal subject, 303-713-8255. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Get your legal bagel, your legal coffee. We're ready to rock and roll for you right now. We're going to talk to Eric from Caitlin's. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. How you doing today, guys?
Good. What's cooking?
We got a couple of things to run by you guys for the next couple of weeks. Our breakfast special is going to be what we call a Garden Benedict, and that's going to be two eggs poached to the temperature of your choice. We're going to put that on a toasted English muffin. We're going to top that off with sliced tomato, fresh avocado, fresh baby spinach, a little bit of hollandaise sauce on top of that. It's a really good deal. We're going to do that for a breakfast special for a couple of weeks. And our lunch special is going to be a chicken tender special. It is a take on our chicken tenders that we normally do on our plate, where we're going to spice it up a little bit. We're going to do three fried chicken tenders. We're going to smother that in what we call a green chili infused cream gravy. Been working on it all week. Finally got it down. It's really, really good. It's really, really spicy. You can get our homemade chips with that, or you can get our waffle cut fries with that. That's going to be our lunch special all week. And don't forget, on Mondays and Fridays from 11 to 2, it's all-you-can-eat taco and burrito buffet. It's actually all you can eat. It's only $7.99. That includes a non-alcoholic beverage in the price. And we are still running those mimosas. We've changed it up a little bit. We're running crafts of the mimosas for $12.50. You can come on down, get those. Don't know what the weather's going to be like. You might have to hang outside with our flat-screen TVs and watch some sports, but the mimosas will be there. All the good eats will be there. The buffet's there on Monday and Friday. So come on down and check out what we have to offer.
Eric.
Yes.
Okay, can I get French toast on cinnamon rolls down there?
Absolutely. In fact, that's going to be one of the next items that's going to go on our permanent menu. We run that as a special. We get requests for it all the time. We do cinnamon roll French toast. We've done a breakfast quesadilla that's added onto the menu. We've got a bunch of new things on. You can come and check it out. But absolutely, you can come down. If there's something that we've run in the past, as a special that you know of that we don't that we're not mentioning on the radio or not running on the board, you come in and ask for it. We don't say no. If you know what it is, we'll go ahead and make it for you. It's not a problem. We never say no.
Well, these specials sound great, but you know, I got a sweet tooth, so I might want that along with my Eggs Benedict.
Yeah, absolutely. You can always get a side of that to go. You bet.
Okay, thank you.
Eric, where are you located?
We're at 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, that's one block east of Colorado Boulevard, and that's in the Glendale Shopping Center, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Eric.
All right, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. Our website is championsofthepeople.com. It's an information letter website. All of these shows are podcasts there. All of our injury shows are listed there in, as podcasts. And all of our special buttons, like what you need to know before you make the first phone call to the adjuster, is there. And the Bell and Pollock Law Firm is going to be at the DU St. Cloud, Minnesota game tonight. If you're there, we'll be glad to meet you. Come up and meet us. It's a great, going to be a great game. DU's rated number one. Right before the break, we were talking to Oscar. Are you still with us, Oscar?
Sure am.
Okay, so on this provision in this contract, it talks about negotiability or something like that. So what is the major thrust from the meaning, of, as you understand it, from this contract provision?
Well, I'll read the statement written here. Negotiability of fees.
Oscar, before you do that, how long is the statement? Because we usually don't do that on the air.
Very short.
Okay, please do then, sir.
The rates and fees set forth and agreed upon between the parties to this agreement are not set by law, but are negotiable between the attorney and the client. And I went on a little bit further, and they're talking about costs and fees for the attorneys. One law group gets 45% of total attorney fees.
Whoa.
And a litigation group gets 55%.
Whoa, wait a minute. No, hold your horses here. No. There's limits on the amount of percentage attorneys can get. There are limits established by the Colorado Supreme Court. Most attorneys, most attorneys do this on a percentage basis of a third. Brad, what's your take on this?
Well, you said this is a medical malpractice case,
right,
Oscar? Okay, so the percentages might be a little higher, but
correct.
I'd want to see this contract. It sounds to me like what's happening is you're being charged a very high percentage. Now, whether that's warranted, and I don't know if this law firm has decided they're going to make a very high percentage based on having talked to you and believing that the case is very risky, and therefore they want a higher percentage because they don't want to work on it without being able to have a huge amount coming back to them, or if this is a normal practice they have. Where they have negotiated it, but it, you know, obviously what they're saying there is they're implying that they've negotiated with you a rate that's higher than a normal rate that they would be charging for their work.
Apparently.
and it doesn't sound like they did that. It sounds like this contract is just a what we call boilerplate language that's in the contract that they're not paying attention to.
Now, it might depend on the facts of your case, Oscar, because as Brad just said, a lot of those types of cases are very intensive, and a lot of them require a lot of attorney work that people never see. And a lot of people, and you might be listening to the show right now going, my gosh, that's incredible percentage. Yeah, you might, and it depends on your case. It depends on the risks in the case. There might be $100,000 spent out of somebody's pocket on a case like that, or $150,000.
Oh, really?
Or $50,000, and it might be lost at the end of the rainbow. If the case doesn't succeed. But, so there are a lot of risks and factors that go into this whole thing.
Did they give you an estimate of costs and how much they thought the case would cost for costs?
Oh, no numbers at all. Other than the 40%, attorney fee, plus the expenses. So.
Yeah, but they didn't tell you how much they thought the expenses would be.
No, I have no idea.
Oh, no, they've got to do that.
Right.
They're supposed to do that. We're going to have to talk to you about that because by law, they have to give you an estimate of what they think the total amount of expenses will be. Because
they have to clarify this. They're from California and Minnesota.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that does make a difference because they have different rules. But what you're facing here is you're not getting the whole story. Because the amount that Gary talked about where it could cost $100,000, that can be the expenses. So that right. would be in addition to the 40 or 45% they're taking on the case. So right. Now let's say your cases is a $300,000 case. If they take 40%, that could be $120,000. Then if they take another, if they have expenses of another 100, that's $220,000 they're taking.
But you have to understand these cases. I mean, when you put yourself in this position, would you like to work for a year and a half or two on anything, betting on the outcome of the situation that you might. You might lose, you might win, and if you lose, you've just lost a year and a half of work. So it drills down to the facts of your particular case. Those are sometimes and many times higher risk cases, and that has to be taken into consideration.
Yeah, whether this is a good one or a bad one we're going to have to look at the contract and I want to compare it with what the laws are in the state. Did they say what laws in which state will apply to the contract? Did they say which ones will apply?
I don't recall that, no.
Okay. You have a copy of the contract, though, right? Okay. We want to get a copy of that from you. If you hold on, Gary, we got to get a copy of that contract.
Right. So, Oscar, we'll put you on hold, and give Kevin your information. We'll get you this week. We'll get a copy of the contract, and we'll tell you specifically what to do and what it means.
All right, thanks, man.
Okay, so hold on, and we appreciate your call, okay?
And we'll decipher it for you.
Thank you very much, Oscar.
Thank you.
Okay, we appreciate everybody's calls. You can call us, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. It's a law talk show. Don't forget the show that follows us, the Consumer Real Estate Show, Barry and Larry, experts in real estate. If you've got a real estate question, a lot of people, as I've said before, have questions on, well, you know, I got to have an inspection. Or what does this inspection mean? Wait a minute, somebody inspected my house. What does this mean? They want me to do all this work, and if I don't agree to it, what happens to my contract? Does the contract go away? Does it become null and void? These gentlemen are experts. They can answer all your real estate questions, and they do every week. I think they do two shows on this station, and one is for information. I think the other one they'll take questions on as well. And don't forget, Bell and Pollock Law Firm is going to be at the DU hockey game tonight. DU versus St. Cloud, Minnesota. DU is ranked number one. It's going to be a lot of fun. If you want to meet us or anybody in our law firm, please come by. If you want any information, we'll be glad to do that, give you our books. I don't think we'll have them at the game, but we'll be glad to do that. Okay, so we're talking still about this contract. It kind of bothers me, but Brad, let's kind of clarify this for everybody. Attorneys do cases on percentage contingent basis. Many people, that's the only way they can have an attorney. And so some people might say, well, okay, that's fair. You do a year and a half of work, year of work, you get a percentage of what you earn. You do a lot of work. If you lose, I don't think anybody understands you don't get paid.
Well, the whole idea behind the contingency contract is to give people access to the courts and access to the law that normally would not have it. If you're a big business and you're hiring a law firm, you go in, and when you hire the law firm, you give them a retainer, and you may give them certain amounts of money. Then that retainer can be $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 that's put into an account. A trust account by the attorney. The attorney holds on to the money. A lot of times in divorces, they're going to want a $5,000 or $10,000 retainer. If it's a DUI or a traffic case, the attorney's going to maybe want a $5,000, $6,000, $10,000 retainer. The attorneys want these retainers. Well, if you've been hurt in an accident, I want you all to think: how many of you have, when you get hurt and you've been injured, how many of you have any kind of money to go in and say, okay, I'll give you $5,000 or $10,000? To the attorney to start working on my case. And then you've got to realize you've still got your bills and you've got your expenses and the attorney's working on your case. And when the attorney exhausts that amount, billing you appropriately, exhausts that amount, then you have to replenish the retainer. So the whole idea of a contingency fee is attorneys that look and say, look, we'll work on a percentage, which we do in our firm, and we say we will not collect anything unless we collect from you, unless we collect for you, from the negligent party, and we get a percentage of what we collect, so there's no definite amount until we collect from the negligent party and we're able to determine how much that is. Now, normally the negligent party is an insurance company. The reason is because by law, they're supposed to be insurance. Now, Gary, we've talked before that there's plenty of people out there who are uninsured, and that's why we talked to you about getting your own insurance coverage for your uninsured and underinsured. So the contingency contract is an important element that allows people access to the courts that otherwise would not have access.
Right, and there's some interesting nuances in the law about this contingency business. And as I said earlier, the attorneys are regulated by the Supreme Court of Colorado. Every Supreme Court of every state regulates those attorneys, issues rules, and we have to follow those rules. But here's a question for you that we'll answer on the other side of the break. Can an attorney do a contingency percentage representation on a divorce case? 303-713-8255. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. We are your champions of the people. Good morning. Welcome back. Here we go. Legal Rock and Roll. Bell and Pollock, Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. We have over 30 years of experience each helping people put their lives back together again. We can help you with a free initial consultation and a free legal game plan. Right before the break, I asked the rhetorical question, can attorneys have a contingency or percentage representation on a divorce case? And the answer is no, you can't. Why? Because the Colorado Supreme Court issues rules and regulations. That's what controls. You can't just do whatever you want to do. Join us live is Steve on a child support question. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm fine. How are you?
Good. What can we do for you?
I'll try to keep it short. I was divorced in Texas 20 years ago, and we split our children up, two children. We split them up. I was to have one, she was to have the other. 3 months after the divorce, she took off with the children, and still to this day, 20 years later, I've never seen them. But the child support kept accumulating. The state of Texas told me, stop paying because we don't even know where she's at to send it to her.
Who told you to stop paying?
The state of Texas.
Who told you?
The Child Support Enforcement Division.
Okay, all right, go ahead.
So, unbeknownst to me, I mean, she disappeared. I didn't know where she was. About 6 years ago, I found out that she was actually in Colorado. So I opened a child support case against myself here in Colorado, and then she disappeared again. Several years ago, I found out that she had moved to Pennsylvania. The way I found that out is that I was served with child support papers from Pennsylvania. When we got divorced, we did what the final divorce decree is in Texas. They call it a prove-up. We went to the prove-up. Now, I was granted 100% of my 401k, and we worked for a large corporation.
Right, Steve, this sounds like a horrible story for you. I'm sorry about your children, but what is your question for us? What can we do for you?
Okay, so in divorce, I was granted 100% of my 401k.
Right.
Unbeknownst to me, during the prove-up, her attorney had submitted a piece of paper to the judge giving her that 401k. I didn't even realize it until a couple of years later.
Were you represented by an attorney, or you do it by yourself?
I was represented by myself.
Okay, go ahead. All right, go ahead.
So, so she got that 401k. In the meantime, now 20 years later, I've been again paying child support, but the arrears were $60,000. I've got it paid down to 40 now. But I just want to know what your opinion is. If I was to petition a court here in Colorado and ask for relief from that arrears based on that 401k that she was granted, she was not actually granted the 401k, they just signed it.
But did she ever take any part of the 401k? Because you might probably would know that day to day, which over the years, did she take it?
Yes, she took 100% the day of the prove up.
So did you know? I mean, you knew that at the time, right? Would you say that?
No, I didn't know it until about a year and a half later. I thought, I haven't gotten any statements from them. I called them and they said that was all turned over to, and they gave her name.
Okay, that would be fair. That would be reasonable. I mean, you didn't go 20 years not knowing, right?
No. It was about a year and a half, but they had granted it to her in a time, needless to say, after losing my children, I was not in the state of mind to go fight for that $25,000.
Okay,
but,
so...
I kind of watched, there's Mobil Exxon. I've kind of watched where the stock has gone. It'd be worth about $150 today.
Let's just take it, and Brad's got his own take on this one. Let's get down to the basic law. And everybody listen to this in divorce cases. When you got a child support order against one parent or the other, okay, the parents usually can't just between themselves change anything, or you can't just take in action and change anything. And most people want to say, if what you did, I haven't seen my kids for 20 years, why should I be paying child support? In many, many cases, I'm not saying this is in Texas, but many cases, that the child support order stands. It stands until you file a court document, usually a motion, to stop it. And the judge usually has no jurisdiction to go earlier than the motion. If you pay child support for 10 years and then file the motion, the first 10 years, many cases, the court has no jurisdiction or power to go back and correct that.
Correct. Yeah. And I found that out the hard way.
Yeah, right.
Like I said, the Texas Department of Child Support said, you know, stop paying it. We don't know where to send it to her. We don't even know where she's at.
Do you have that in writing at all? Did they send it, confirm it?
I do not. I do not. And unfortunately, I did not petition a Texas court. I'd already come back to Colorado by that time.
Okay.
I did not petition the court to get it stopped. So I learned the hard way that it continues on.
Well, when you talk to the person in Texas that said that, have you gotten that file? Do you have their file, their entire set of documents that they would have been maintaining on you in their computer file?
I don't, but I'm sure I could ask for that file.
Well, the reason I say that is you might want to get it because it might help you with things like interest and any other expenses. Now, child support is a right to the child. It's not just a right to the spouse. It's a right to the child. And, of course, children can't give up their rights to child support. And so, you know, child support is child support. And if your ex was living on any kind of public assistance will take an assignment of that child support, and then they can't lose it either. So there's a lot of questions that are working in your case. As far as the 401k, the question is going to be, should you have acted sooner once you learned that they had given them the 401k? There was obviously, it sounds like, a mistake at law as far and a fact as far as you were concerned in what was happening. It sounds if you have your child support agreement, or not your child support, but your separation agreement or the court order divorcing you that identifies how the assets are being divided, which would either be permanent orders or your separation agreement. I would like to see it to see if it addresses your 401k, but usually 401ks are handled by some kind of qualified domestic relations order. It's called a quadro that's going to discuss exactly how retirement funds are being handled. And under some, because normally your 401k isn't something she can get right away. It's something that the statement was going someplace else that was noticed to you, but it's a statement that, they've got to start, they've got to say that when the 401k is ready to get paid, it's got to go to a different person than who's identified on the 401k, and that's done through a qualified domestic relations order. So you've got a lot of questions here that, you know, I really think we need to talk to you and get some information from you to find out what's happened.
But, Steve, you need to get that file, the computer file. You need to request it from whoever told you to stop paying child support, because that can become absolutely critical on the question of intent. Are you with me?
I am.
Okay, so I'm going to put you on hold. You give Kevin your information, and we're going to give you some help and some guidance and a game plan. How would that be?
We'll love it. Thank you guys so much.
Okay, Steve, thanks for the call. We appreciate it very much. We're going to talk with Alice now. I'm from Henderson, Colorado. Good morning, Alice.
Good morning.
What can we do for you, ma'am?
I'm having problems with structural engineering on our townhomes.
All right.
We've had people out here twice, so homeowners send them out. It's the same person twice.
Right.
There are several of us that have cracks in our garages, our garage floors,
right,
with water, and the cracks getting from the garage door opening, coming up closer to our entrance into our buildings or into our houses. And they send people out, but we never hear from them again. And I understand from the attorneys for the Homeowners Association that we have 10 years of recourse. Well, we have 1 year left, because most of us have been living here.
Okay, Alice, we're up against the wall on time. I'm going to put you on hold. Give Kevin your information. We're going to solve your problem. We're going to give you a call this week, okay?
Thank you.
You need some action taken.
You need some action taken. Thank you very much for the call, Alice.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Kevin, please take care of her. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. It's a law talk show. Come see us at the DU game tonight. We'll be glad to talk to you, meet you, greet you. And we're going to be there at the Bell and Pollock Law Firm. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. I keep saying it's an information-loaded website, and it is, because we are your champions of the people.
The proceeding was a paid advertisement. The opinions, viewpoints, and promises made during the preceding program are not those of KHOW, its staff, management, or parent company, iHeartMedia Incorporated.